Good afternoon and welcome to El Paso Primetime. I'm Richard Dayoub. I'm president and CEO of the Greater El Paso Chamber of Commerce. And with me this afternoon is former Mayor Joe Wardy, who is also serving currently as the chairman of the city's Charter Review Committee. And Joe was kind enough to join me today so we could share with you, our audience, all eight of those city charter amendments and discuss them in greater detail. So welcome, Joe.
Good afternoon, Richard. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. Is there maybe something you'd like to share with the audience in terms of how you went through the process of setting up the City Charter Review Committee and maybe some of the folks who served on it, just to inform the public?
Well, I know that the council, each council member and the mayor were allowed to appoint one member to the committee. I was Mayor Leiser's appointment, and I can tell you that sometimes you get appointed to committee and there's two or three people that are real vocal and some people that don't really speak or participate. This was a real exception to that. I can tell you that I think a lot of thought went into it. There was great cohesion in the committee. Everybody participated. It was fun. We had a tremendous amount of public participation. We decided at our first meeting that we were allowed to have six meetings, so we would have five meetings at different places in the city. So we went to the east side, to the west side, to northeast, to central, and I can tell you that the wrap-up was at City Hall. Most of the work had been concluded by that time, but it was a great process. We had 68 official people that signed up to speak at our various meetings. The heaviest voter participation was on the east side, the west side, and northeast, members that came to speak. But there were a number of other people that didn't actually sign in that spoke as members of the public. We did have a couple of the city representatives participate, come to meetings, and we asked them their opinion on some of these items. So it was a very lively exchange. We were very disciplined on the time. And it went very well.
Yeah, I was very pleased. As you know, I attended several of them, and when the ones I couldn't attend, some members of our staff at the chamber attended as well. I'm not going to put you on the spot to remember every one of them, the members' names, but would you just share with the audience some of the folks who served with you on the committee?
Well, Enrique Moreno, who is a prominent attorney in El Paso, Joyce Wilson, who's our former city manager,
Yolanda Hiner.
Yolanda Hiner.
Right.
James Montoya, a very smart young attorney in El Paso. David Thaxton.
Right.
I'm going to offend someone by leaving their name out.
Sure.
But I don't have the list in front of me, but I can tell you that it was a great group. And Betty Spencer. But it was a very lively group, good exchange. And you know, we weren't unanimous. We were unanimous in all but one of our decisions.
Which one was that?
The one on changing the city election. And I abstained from the voting. And Mr. Moreno, Enrique Moreno, also said, if I don't know you could abstain, I would have abstained also. That one, I think we probably need to try it and see how it goes to get more voter participation. There's some dangers in moving it to November that I don't know that were considered properly, but hey, you know what? If it doesn't work, we can always go back to the other way.
Great. And actually, even though we're going to cover the actual ballot items during the course of this show and our upcoming show, we're going to do this in two parts. I think it would be, by way of explanation and information for the audience, to know a little bit about that one particular subject, because that did not end up on the ballot, correct?
That's correct. There were a number of issues that the council instructed us that they wanted us to look at. I can tell you that they wanted us to review the following: meetings, ordinances, fiscal year and budget procedures, and the mayor's powers. Those were the four items. And then members of the committee brought up additional couple of items, and there was a couple of items brought up by members of the public. So in all, we probably had a general discussion of 8 to 9 items and only taking position on about 4 or 5 of them.
Right. So if I remember correctly, I think I was at the actual meeting in Northeast. Representative Robinson was there as well. But of course, he only can comment like the public does. He's not a part of the committee. Was it that meeting? Is my memory serving me correctly? David Thaxton is the one who raised the issue to try and move the elections back to the May timeframe, right? From November, was it, David?
Yes, it was David Thaxton. And he had some really good points. There are a number of issues. I'm probably 50-50. There's as many pros and cons to both positions. And, you know, it passed by a very slim margin, and it was grouped with a number of other changes in the city charter 2 years ago. So I guess we'll see how it goes. My biggest concern is, number one, the runoffs. You're going to end up with runoffs in December, and they already have a hard time getting judges for the precinct judges. So that's going to be an issue, and I think it's going to be hard to get people to come out and vote in mid-December for runoff elections.
Right. Would you mind if we talk a little bit about this? Because I think for the listening audience, not having some of this background, but let's begin with, in what year will the elections begin to occur in November versus May?
I believe it's 2018. Okay, so every second year, the election, city elections, will move to November. And the goal of that initiative was to get more voter participation because we don't have good voter participation for the number of registered voters in our community. That being said, on the plus side, you're going to get more voter participation because it's going to be state offices, federal offices, even the president on some years. The downside is can get lost in the shuffle. You know, the city elections are nonpartisan, as are the school board elections. The number of voters you have to reach as a candidate is going to expand tremendously. Possibly making it more costly for people that would like to run for office to get their message out because they'll be competing against candidates for state and federal offices.
Right.
And then the issue of, you know, precinct judges for runoffs. I don't know that anybody considered that that would possibly put runoffs into December. We're concerned about the difficulty of getting the staffing for a proper election, runoff election, and voter turnout in December
right.
for a runoff election. But you know, we haven't tried this, so these are discussions. We don't know how this is going to work. You know, I think that getting more people in the process is a good thing.
I agree.
So we'll see. Our first test is going to be in November of 2018, and we'll see how it works.
And for clarity, the reason it'll be more expensive will be because those who are trying to buy ad time on television, on radio, or on billboards, newspapers, will be competing with those who are running for president, for U.S. Senate, for Congress, etc. And their campaign trust funds, if you will, are a little bit heavier in terms of contributions. So they're able to pay for those more expensive ads. But that then challenges the local market because now you're having to try to buy that time in competing with those national candidates. Is that correct?
That's correct. Even the direct mail, you know, you target a certain number of voters that vote in the municipal elections, the best voters in El Paso. There's lists available, you know, to candidates. Now the lists expand exponentially because you're talking about people that participate in state and federal elections, and the base increases. There's extremely heavy voter participation, especially when it's a presidential election year. So we'll have to see how that turns out, Richard.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think that helps all of us listening to understand why this ended up not being on the ballot going forward. There are a couple of others I wouldn't mind talking about either if you're up for it.
Sure, let's go for it.
I thought since we have two segments to cover, maybe the audience would appreciate, because many folks could not or did not attend these sessions, and so they missed some of the dialogue that occurred. But I found one in particular interest. Which the chamber, by the way, was encouraging the committee to support, but ultimately did not get pushed through council, which was to give mayor and council pay raises, correct?
That's correct. I'm on that one, I'm going to tell you that I'm very disappointed. I know that there was a lot of attention played in the media to the council's action to raise the city manager's salary to make him competitive with other city managers in the state. I don't have a problem with that. Maybe the methodology that was approached could have been different, but anyway, it's done. And then the council, with all due respect, got a little weak in the knees and decided to back off a recommendation that was unanimous from the committee. And I can tell you, I want to be real clear in this program, that the members of the public that signed up to speak on this issue, which were numerous, were all in favor of raising the pay of the mayor and council. And what it boils down to is, right now, let's just face the reality of it. The people that can afford that we usually get for, let me back up, the people that end up running for city council and mayor are usually people, number one, that are individually wealthy or have their own businesses, or they're retired. So it eliminates a huge group of people that may want to take a hiatus from their professional career to serve their community. And nobody's going to get rich doing this, but you can see the results on the commissioner's court. There are a couple of members of the court that are probably a little bit younger that decided the pay, you know, you're not going to get rich doing it. You're going to make more money in the private sector, but they could afford to make their house payment and buy groceries for their family. They're volunteering themselves for public service, which is a huge sacrifice. I don't care what anybody says. If we could even just get to parity with what the county is paying, and their budget is less than half of the city's. That being said, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to downplay the importance of county government. It's the predominant form of government in our state. But being a city council rep and mayor used to be, in the old days, a part-time job. It's no longer a part-time job. There's a lot that goes on, and it's not about being in your office. There's a lot of reading, a lot of research from your staff. There's more than one. You maybe go to three or four meetings a week. You've got events in the public. It's a big responsibility. We would like to get more people. I personally would like to get more people involved in the process. I think it's healthy. And it shouldn't just be people that are individually wealthy or people that are retired. I think that we're missing something. That's my opinion. That was kind of the opinion of the committee. And the council initially was supporting it. There was an arbitrary number we put forward. Just let's throw a number out there just to get things going. But eventually decided not to put it on the issue because of the strong comment, let's just say that way, on the city manager's salary increase.
Well, thank you for covering that. I think it's really important for the community to understand this because, by the way, just for the record, the chamber was strongly in support of giving mayor and council fair raises to make them competitive. Just for the benefit of the listening audience, as a note, Las Cruces, which also has a city manager form of government and is a much smaller community with a much smaller budget to operate with, they pay their mayor significantly higher than we do our mayor. And we're a major metropolitan city by anyone's standards. I believe we're ranked number 19th in the nation now by population. We have a budget that exceeds $700 million a year, so it's significant work that goes into it. And I agree with you. Our board was hopeful this would come forward so we could support this because we all believe we need to have more young, bright, dedicated folks who are willing to serve their community but cannot do so, as you stated, because they can't afford to pay for their families, you know, lifestyles. They can't make a mortgage payment. They can't make a car payment, feed their families, let alone put money in the bank if they're serving under the current pay structure. So perhaps the next go around will convince a different city council to support something like this. So with that in mind, I think we have time to at least begin covering some of these initiatives. So we have, I think, about another 15 minutes. So why don't we begin with the first one, which is the issue relating to the definition of council in city charter, which speaks to the issue of the mayor's role and how they're counted. So if we could talk a little bit about that, if you'd like me, I can clarify for the audience, and you can speak to this issue. Keeping the mayor separate from the supermajority is necessary to push back a mayoral veto, which we think is common sense. Forming a supermajority, including the mayor, for a voting bloc, seeking to overturn a mayoral veto would make the supermajority more elusive and would push back against one of council's checks against mayoral powers. The proposed city charter amendment would ensure that situation could not occur. Would you care to elaborate a little bit for us?
Okay, there's two things that occurred here. This went on the powers of the mayor. Number one, there were some redundancies in the city charter that were kind of like, what if, or how do you interpret this? Because there were some conflicts on the definition of council, whether it was on certain issues, whether the mayor was included in the council, or in certain issues he's not included as a member of the council. So this item attempts to clean that up. But the biggest issue on this was the fact that there was great discussion on the mayor's powers. There were certain members of the council and members of the community that thought that the mayor should also have a vote. And I can tell you that there really wasn't much support for that, because a member of the public gave a very eloquent presentation when we were in Northeast about, by the mayor having the power to veto and break ties, he essentially has a vote.
Yes, he does.
And I'm of the belief, and I don't know the history of this, but I think that the founders of our city, and every city is different, saw the powers of the mayor as more the executive branch. And I can tell you the veto power is not used a lot, but sometimes I believe that the council can get caught up in the emotion of an issue and maybe make a bad decision or a decision that's not as founded on fact as it should be. Therein lies the mayor with the ability to veto it for the council to reconsider. It could be amended. It could be rescinded or brought back in another form. So I think it's good governance. Much like the governor of the state of Texas has a veto, the president has line item veto powers. Basically, the mayor of El Paso has the same veto powers. I think it's healthy. I think it's good governance.
We agree with you, by the way, and are supporting this particular initiative for all the reasons you just mentioned. And probably half a dozen more, having experienced you as mayor, me as the business guy from the chamber, coming to council meetings on countless occasions and witnessing decisions that may have been made in haste, and that ability to interject a veto action is really, to use your exact words, an excellent form of checks and balances. Thank you. And so we're moving on to the second proposed amendment. This amendment proposes to remove charter language that prevents three things: council members from holding any other compensated public office, kind of important, council members from holding any other compensated public employment, and three, council members from holding a compensated city position until 1 year has elapsed after completion of their term. And the way the charter amendment is being proposed, the language would make it align more so with state statutes that are already in place. So if you'd like to articulate a little bit more on that.
Well, that's an overriding issue when the charter review discussions. There are some onerous parts of the city charter that basically are much more strict than state law. And most cities have decided to make their charters go in line with state law. You know, it's very difficult. Cities have to have a lot of flexibility today. I think the most important part of this one is if a person is an instructor at UTEP or community college or the El Paso Public Schools, he's prohibited, once he gets elected, he or she is elected to city council or the office of mayor, from continuing in that position. I think in today's time, that's a little bit ridiculous. I believe they can carry out their duties, and I think most people would agree with me. And the state agrees that you can continue to be a college professor or an administrator or a public school teacher, and it will not affect your ability to serve in your elected position. So this helps to clean that up a little bit. And it's been a cause of concern, and it's been a thorn, especially when we are wanting more people to participate in the process.
Yeah, more qualified people.
Correct.
And I agree with you, by the way. And as an example, just for our listening audience, there are other entities in the community who do not place the same restrictions upon their elected officials, albeit sometimes the differentiation here is that city council, however low they are compensated already. So that's the clear line of definition. They're compensated versus others who might be appointed and are not compensated. But we totally agree with you, and we're supporting that as well. Moving on to the next amendment, this one The city charter currently requires council to meet every week. And this is my favorite subject, by the way. Requires the city council to meet every week with a smaller number of cancellations permitted each year. The proposed amendment would require council to meet at least once every other week. And so this one also took on a lot of dialogue. I can remember attending no fewer than two or three of those meetings where this kept coming back. Would you please explain this one a little bit?
This item probably got the most discussion, and over a series of almost four meetings, we finally came to our position on this. I can tell you that one of our members did some legal research, as well as the city attorney's office, and we had the strictest requirement for meetings in the state of Texas. The business of city government or city government entails a lot more than having council meetings. And I'm not sure that the public realizes the amount of resources required to put on a city council meeting by a huge number of the city staff. We're trying to do more with less in city government. If we can allow a little bit of flexibility here for them in certain situations to be able to work on quality of life projects and other things that are a clear priority in our community and not be bogged down, so to speak, with having to prepare every week for a city council meeting, then I think we're moving in the right direction. So we looked at like five different options, and I think council even changed the option that was brought to them by the committee. So I think they're going to make their – it looks like they're going to make a schedule of meetings what's been proposed at the beginning of each year. And every other week, as long as – you know, a lot of people make their living because of ordinances and things like that. As long as they know what the schedule is, I think people are going to be okay with that. But I think we need a breather. I think there's sometimes that there may be light agendas and we don't need to meet. So this one got a tremendous amount of discussion, and there was a lot of research done to see what other cities went. There's no two cities alike, none. So we decided to borrow or call it benchmarking against other communities. And I think this got we gave some good data to members of council and the mayor, and I think this is good. I think this is really a good thing for the modernization of our city government.
We agree with you. The chamber is supporting this. We actually encourage council to even be more flexible than simply every other week. And you're right. The preparation for these council meetings by the city staff consumes, some would tell you, all-consuming their lives in preparation, and therefore they have less time to actually get the work done that needs to be done to run city government. So we think it's a step in the right direction for them to move to fewer meetings. Plus, they have the ability, through the way this amendment is being proposed, to call city council meetings, special ones, as necessary. So it's not like work can't get done because we're scheduled every other week. We actually have made a suggestion to the mayor himself, city manager, as well as some members of council, that whenever you do have your city council meetings, and this is a sore subject for a lot of folks, but wouldn't it be nice if they set the agenda by time and set aside that time and stick to that time so that if you're covering, as in one example, a call to the public, or if you're covering issues related to permits and licenses, or another section regarding development projects, and you'd set the time frame, a window. These are when they'll be covered. Then you enable the entire public who wish to attend those meetings and are interested about those specific subjects to attend only for that portion. Because too often, as you know, it happened when you were mayor, we'd have to move something up quickly and cover it for some specific reason, legitimate reason. But nonetheless, you have an audience participating who expected to cover a particular subject at a particular time, then now are pushed to go to a different subject at a different time, and now they have to sit and wait. And sometimes people spend a good portion of their entire day at council meetings. So we're trying to encourage council, as a sort of a courtesy to the public, to follow a pattern within the agenda that everyone can live with and make life easier for everyone, including, by the way, members of council themselves, who know that when we're going to cover a particular subject. I see that we're running a little low on time. We've only covered three of the eight, but in our next episode, if that's the right word to use, we will cover the remaining five. And so we are wrapping up today with some comments. If you have some closing comments to make before we wrap up this show and prepare for our next show, happy to hear from you.
Well, the last item that we discussed about reducing the frequency of city council meetings, there's another proposed city charter change that we'll discuss in the next segment that will help this quite a bit if the voters will approve it. But I want to let the voters of El Paso know and the people that are listening to the show that a lot of work went into this. I can tell you there was a lot of citizen input, and council gave us the power to have the discussions with a lot of citizen input so that things could go well. And I can tell you that I think the entire process went very well, and everybody that participated, members of the public, the committee, and the council, I think we've handled this one properly. I think we get good marks from the community for this.
Well, thank you. And Mayor Wardy, thank you again for participating with what I think is a very informative piece of information for our public, which we hope will also encourage them to show up to vote. And we'll cover the other five again in the next sequence in these stories. Thank you again, Mayor Wardy.
Thank you very much for having me on the show today.